Accession number 20126, Reel 4.
Tom Flavelle, Reel 4. So, when you were going down the Cabo Valley, how did the East Africans take to that type of operation?
No problem. I mean, it was jungle, but it wasn't thick. It wasn't thick jungle. It was wide open spaces, some of it. But no, it was just it was just so wet, unpleasant. There were no wild animals in the Cabo. No snakes, no nothing, no birds. It's incredible. I don't know why. Of course, Cabo means death, doesn't it? I think it was Death Valley. It was called. But so strange, you couldn't hear a thing in the night or in the daytime. No birds sing at all. Strange.
And did you have a problem with mosquitoes?
No. Not in the monsoon. Too wet for them too. We probably all had malaria one way or another, but it was immobilised, as it were. We used to take a pill called Mapocrin, and they contain the illness within one, and it's when you stop taking the things that you get the malaria. So that was fair enough. Everyone began to look a bit yellow. Yeah, but it wasn't. I was just trying to think. No, I'm wasting your tape. I was going to enlarge on the perimeter business, but there was only a couple of things came through my mind. I had a signal sergeant who was an ex-police, Birmingham police. He had the MBE or something for what he'd done in the air raids in Birmingham. And he was a big fella. And he always used to share the slip trench with me, and he used to do the digging. I remember that. Copper Canning. Canning his name was. Copper Canning. Yeah. And he was chicken. Oh, he was chicken. He used to worry. I don't think he ever slept. Yeah. But in the daytime, I wasn't there, you see. Now, we had a battery quartermaster sergeant. He was responsible for taking rations up to our forward troops, and he wasn't happy about that, so I always used to take the rations with me, and he used to stay back at the cookhouse. But it's the feeling we had a young officer, and his lieutenant, in the battery, and he was checking. You get people like that. He had to be sent back down the line after. Yeah.
Was that because of the constant nighttime threat?
Yeah, that's right. Some people, they can take it, some people snap. And, but it wasn't a hard war in that sense, as far as we were concerned. It was a definite job, something definite. Others had worse.
How many miles a day would you make on the track?
Two or three, sometimes. Nothing. Sometimes we would stay put for 4 or 5 days. When I used to go forward, I'd just have a driver with me, and I'd have a rough idea of where our troops would be. They'd put a marker out of some sort. But sometimes you might go a bit too far, and you come to a place which has only recently been deserted. There were quite a few Japs, but we didn't see them, not many of them.
So the Japs could infiltrate either side of the road at any time?
Yeah.
The distance between the forward post and, say, the battery position, would there be troops?
Could be a mile. No, there'd be nothing there. No one there. In fact, there was one section which the Japs had been very, very well established. It must have been a base of some sort. There were buildings, bamboo, and buildings and a parade square and offices and all sorts. I went through there. In fact, one of the battery commanders, Mackay, he told me about it. He said there's the KAR, that's our infantry, 5KAR, had sheared the Japs from there, and might be a bit of a loot worth having, because I was always wanting tools. And he said, see if there's a workshop. He said, don't get yourself killed or anything, but he says it's all fresh. He said the KAR have moved out, the Japs have moved out, see what you can find. So I went down there, and I had a good snoop around. There wasn't much of use to me, but they'd only been gone about half a day, if that. And I was coming back near to the proper track, and I came upon one askari from KAR. He'd been shot in the foot, and he was hobbling along, and he on about this gun, Mazinga. And this is probably in the war diary, I expect. But anyway, I followed him up there. I left my jeep. I left him with the jeep, and I went to where he pointed. And there, in a small dugout emplacement, was a Japanese 75mm field piece. I thought, my God, you know, this is the thing that's been keeping us awake at night. And I started to go up to it, and it went through my mind. Booby trap. So I left it, and I came back, and I took the askari back to his lines, to his platoon. And then I went back to my own battery, and I told this major, and I said, I'm pretty sure it's booby trapped. And I said, I'm not going to try and find out. And it was. He got one of the RE's specialists to go up there, and they defused it. What they'd done, they'd put a shell in the muzzle, pointing in towards the. So if anyone had tried to fire it or tried to unload it, that was it. Just a guess. So they gave up the gun, but they tried to kill someone with it.
Did you see much evidence of other? Did you see much evidence of Japanese bodies or?
There weren't a lot. Used to get some in the night. As I say, I got three in one night once. But, there was no war graves people or anything like that with us. And if Japs were fallen, I remember seeing they must have been there 3 or 4 days. They'd blow up, you know, musty. No, it wasn't a very active war in that sense. They were just odds and ends trying to make their way back. In the main.
So
I don't know how they crossed the Chindwin, actually, because I remember when I first saw this river, there was a couple of paddle steamers, stern wheelers, like the old American things, and they were moored, well, they were probably incapacitated, but they were moored downstream a bit. There were no buildings as such. I couldn't understand it. This was Calais, where it's supposed to be a town. No buildings. No activity. And two div, I mean, they were. I think by then, the war in Europe had just about finished, and we who could get nothing could now have anything we wanted. And the REs came through, passed through our lines, with these pontoons on trucks, and they built a pontoon bridge across the Chindwin there, which I believe was the longest one during the war. You know, crossways with the planks laid over the top. Anything could drive over them. And that was the second time that I saw Japanese aircraft in action. They came over to try and have a go at it. But we'd got some 40mm anti-tank equipment on the other side of the river by then, and they frightened them away. We didn't see them again.
You say the second time, had you seen some in the Cabo Valley?
Oh, yes, they used to come in there.
Can you tell me about those?
One particular one, that I think they were more an observation than anything else. It wasn't on the attack. They did drop some small butterfly bomb things amongst us. I suppose we would have been quite clear to see in the daylight there. We had very few soldiers in the perimeter at the time. It was daytime. There was a Bren gun on a mounting by the battery headquarters office, so I manned that, and I got a few shots at him, but I was probably hopeless. I mean, I was no machine gunner. And it zoomed around a couple of times, dropped these few things, and then pushed off. And the thing about the Japanese aircraft, they sound as though they're falling to pieces. Yeah. Strange. The engines, I mean. Yeah. And you could see the chap. As he came over, you just see his head and shoulders. I hope he found somewhere to go back to.
What type of aircraft was it?
I don't know.
Would it have been a fighter or an observation aircraft?
It was a fighter of some sort. Yeah. It wasn't a light aircraft. It was a fighting aircraft. Yes, it was.
And had you been supplied by the air in the journey down the Kabul Valley?
No. No, we had our lines of communication open all the time from when we started, yeah. I don't know of any airdrops to us there.
So you'd push down the Kabul Valley to Kalewa?
Kalewa.
And that was the length of... how long were you doing that for?
Well, from the top of the Kabul Valley down to there, oh, it must have been a month or more. You didn't take count of time. I mean, it's... Yeah.
And that was all through the monsoon?
Well, the monsoon finished when we were about 2 or 3 miles from the Chindrin. Yeah. The monsoon finished, in fact, as soon as the 2D started to move in. They moved through us. Yeah. And then we went down to refit. Again, that was a journey all the way to Ranchi in Bihar State, where we were to be refit to go back again later on.
So this whole time you've been down there, had you experienced any other problems with the conditions, the weather conditions, with medical problems or supply problems?
We had... 2 or 3 deaths. One was a European, white. I can't think of his name now. And we had 2 or 3 other Africans as well, who died of typhus, tick typhus. That was I don't know much about it. I think it's something you pick up. I know one day he was well, and the next day he was bad and dead, and that was it. Tick typhus. I've heard of it, I know it's what it was.
And what problems had you experienced repairing the vehicles?
None really. The worst thing was cheap springs for... that brings back another angle. When we were relieved by... Well, just before we were relieved by 2DIV, the Americans said they would run an airstrip and bring us in some jeep springs and other equipment that we wanted. And they did, and they cleared a section, quite a big strip, and they came in gliders. Dakota towing a glider, cast off, landed on the airstrip. And then they actually took them away again. They manhandled them round to get the full length, two pilots together, and they laid out a cable with a loop on it, and they snatched it into the air with a Dakota. They literally came down and snatched it into the air. They had some guts, those fellas. I hear what they say about Americans, they had some guts, they did. You can see their expressions on there, holding on, waiting for the thing to snatch them from zero up to about 150 miles an hour, I should think. And they flew, and then it struck me. Silly thought, really, as I've been a month or more on this track, and in a couple of hours' time, they're going to be in Calcutta. Yeah. I think that's enough for you to... Well, we were relieved by Tudy of Cross Keys, who took over from there. I believe that one brigade of the East Africans stayed with Tudiv to give the impression to the Japanese that we were still there. And the rest of us made our way from Kalewa all the way back to Dimapur, and then on the train, and then on a river boat at one time. I don't know where that would be. Anyway, we finished up at a place called Ranchi, and that is in Bihar State, and the object then was to refit, retrain, and go again, but the Americans dropped the bomb. That was it.
So when had you actually been down in the Kabul Valley? When was that roughly? Is that 1944 or 45?
44, 45, yeah. It was around Christmas time, I think. No, just before Christmas, about July, August. Yeah.
Was it after the fighting at Imphal?
Yes. Long after that.
So had you pushed down the valley throughout 44 and into early 45?
Yeah, that's it.
When you'd reached the Chinguin?
That's it, yeah. That's right. And then towards the end of 45, we were at Bihar. Tell you a silly thing, we were there at Christmas, I know, and we ordered a Chinese cook, and he was going to provide us with ducks, and he did, and he brought these ducks in all roasted with their little feet in the air. It's disgusting. That was a Bihar. Yes, it was all over then, because the Americans dropped the bomb, didn't they? Yeah.
So how do you feel now about having served with the East Africans in Burma?
Oh, I was proud of them. I mean, they weren't brilliantly minded or particularly clever at anything, but they were good people. Yeah. Yes,